Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Alexandra Wishart for Romadske Radio in Kyiv. We're bringing you our feature interview, followed by some new music. This week, our host Marta Dzyżok brings you two perspectives on the foreign policy implications of Ukraine's presidential election. She speaks to Brian Whitmore, senior fellow and policy analyst in Washington, and Volodymyr Dubovik of the International Relations Department at Odessa Mechnikov University to get a view from inside and abroad.
Presidential election campaign has been very colorful, to say the least. And now there are two men who are still left in the running, and Ukrainians will be deciding who will become their next president on Sunday, the 21st of April. They're choosing between the incumbent Petro Poroshenko and the challenger Volodymyr Zelensky. Most of the campaign has focused on domestic issues and the fact that Mr. Zelensky is a comedian and he doesn't have any political experience. But very few people have been talking about foreign policy. As you know, Ukraine has been on the receiving end of a war for the last 5 years. And what I'd like to talk about today is the foreign policy implications of what will happen if one or the other candidate will be elected. I'm Marta Dzyżok for Hromadske Radio, and with me today I have two foreign policy experts on two continents. Brian Whitmore is the senior fellow and the director of the Russia program at the Center for European Policy Analysis, and Volodymyr Dubovik is associate professor of international relations at Odessa Mechnikov National University. We've reached Mr. Whitmore in Washington and Professor Dubovik in Odessa. Gentlemen, thank you very much for finding the time to speak to us. Most elections are won or lost on domestic issues. But because Ukraine's on the receiving end of the war, the domestic and foreign policy lines, I think, are a little bit more blurred. Now, most public opinion polls are showing that Ukrainians want peace, but there hasn't been a whole lot of talk about this during the election campaign. I'm wondering what you make of that, why that is, and I don't know who'd like to start.
I can start, Martin. Yeah.
Sure. That's Ms. Professor Dubovik.
Right. Well, you're right. It's a combination of factors in this campaign, domestic or foreign, war or reforms and standards of living. It turns out that for a lot of people, most people, the domestic concerns and priorities are the more important issue that they base their vote on. Even for a lot of people who are concerned about the war and who are pro-Ukrainian and who don't want to see any concessions to Russia and would like to put Donbass and Crimea to be returned to Ukraine, even for a lot of them, issues like corruption, lack of reform or less of reform, standing of living in the country is something that they care about.
Sorry to interrupt. I totally agree with you. I mean, those issues of corruption are important, but the war is a domestic issue because Ukrainian men are being called up to go to fight and be injured and die. So this isn't a foreign policy issue of intervening in a foreign conflict. This is a conflict on their territory. This is, you know, mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters that are affected by the war.
Well, actually, I'd like to pick up on that, Marta, because this anticipates where I wanted to go. You really can't separate domestic issues from security issues in Ukraine today. I would argue you can't separate them anywhere, but you certainly can't separate them in Ukraine. And in Ukraine today, Ukraine's on the front lines of two different wars, or two connected wars.
That's right.
Yeah, you have a hot war going on in the Donbas. You have a kinetic war going on in the Donbas. You have a war where people are shooting and fighting and dying in the Donbas. But Ukraine's also on the front lines of what I call a war of governance right now. This struggle between the kind of kleptocratic system that exists in Russia and the more transparent system that exists to the West. And the way I see this, I mean, Ukraine is trying to break free from what the Russians call sistema. Right, this system of patron-client, corrupt, kleptocratic relationships that is really how Russia's always been governed. Whether we're talking about the Grand Duchy of Muscovy, the Russian Empire, the Soviet Union, or the post-Soviet Union. And Ukraine's trying to break out of that right now. So you really, and that is front and center in the security issue, right? Ukraine can't win this war unless it manages to break out of the Russian-Soviet systema. And so I think these two things are interrelated. Petro Poroshenko has done a very good job as a war president, right? He's played a very bad hand extremely well. I mean, after the Minsk agreement was signed, my first reaction was Ukraine is doomed. And because basically Ukraine was dealt just an awful hand by that agreement, which Poroshenko effectively signed with a gun to his head. But then he played that very, very bad hand masterfully. And the Ukrainian armed forces surprised everybody by fighting the Russians to a draw. But Poroshenko's done less well on the war of governance. Now, I'm always been a glass half full guy on Ukraine. I think a lot has been accomplished, but the public is not happy with what's not been accomplished, right? Ukraine needs antitrust legislation. Ukraine needs an independent prosecutor general. Ukraine needs to really step up the battle against corruption. But these things, Poroshenko, fairly or unfairly, has been seen as not delivering on and has been unable to kind of break the oligarchic pluralism that's dominated Ukraine. And so the public the voters are punishing him for that right now, to the extent that they're willing to take a chance on somebody who, let's face it, we don't know anything about.
Well, let me interrupt you here, because the dissatisfaction on the lack of changes is palpable. I mean, that's what the polls are showing. But let's reframe this to the foreign policy and security issues, because what would happen if Poroshenko was elected? What would happen if Zelensky was elected? Because what we've seen just in the last final stretch of the campaign is they're both visiting European capitals and touching base with French President Macron, German Chancellor Merkel. There's talk about, you know, reviving the Normandy meeting in May. So what are the possible sort of scenarios there, and how could that play out in the last phases of the election and after?
Well, I don't know if Volodya wants to jump in. I have some things to say about that.
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay. I mean, as far as the Normandy format, I mean, the Normandy format's dead. And it's very clear to me what Poroshenko is doing here. It's a tried and true tactic. He's kind of burnishing his image as the commander in chief by showing that he's the one that's going to go and set this up. But the Normandy format, let's face it, is dead. It's going nowhere. There's going to be a war in the Donbass as long as Russia wants there to be a war in the Donbass, and Russia sees it to its advantage to keep the war going or there. So there's no point in any more Normandy format meetings. But I understand politically exactly what Poroshenko is trying to do here. He's trying to show that he's the commander in chief, and standing in contrast to this this television comedian. Yeah, that's what he's trying to do.
Right. I agree absolutely with Brian. I think that the Normandy format has never been an efficient one, really. It was always more of a substitute of a real policy or vision of what needs to be done on Ukraine-Russia conflict. Unfortunately, a lot of people in the West are concerned about ongoing Ukraine-Russia conflict, and they don't see a clear understanding, they don't have a clear understanding on what needs to be done to help end that conflict. So instead, they come up with all sorts of formats which are not productive, really, and Normandy format is one of those. Not to mention that there haven't been a lot of meetings for a long time in the Normandy format, so...
Well, let's face it, too. Europe is not really, this is not on top of their agenda right now, to put it mildly, right? So, I mean, Europe is basically preoccupied with Brexit.
That's true. The United States also is preoccupied with other issues. Let me reframe my question, because what I'm really interested in, and I want to know your views, is will it make a difference in Ukraine's foreign policy who wins this election? Will Ukraine take a different foreign policy direction if Zelensky, the challenger comedian, wins? Or if Poroshenko wins, he's likely to stay the course. But is there likely to be a difference depending on who wins?
In essence, I don't think there can be a difference, because Ukrainian society has made its choice. And any president is going to have to deal with a society that's made that choice. So the parameters are pretty much set. You can make changes along the margins. And again, let's face it, we've seen this through how many Ukrainian elections have we seen this? And we thought the sky was falling. Marta, remember back in 94, you and I thought the sky was falling when Kuchma won.
Kuchma, yeah.
And I mean, despite his faults, and they are legion, specifically in his second term, but Kuchma did, you know, was supposed to, you know, deliver Ukraine right to the step of the Kremlin, and he didn't do that. Mm-hmm. He didn't do that at all. We thought the sky was falling when Yanukovych won. And to an extent, it was possibly falling, but it didn't fall because Ukrainian civil society didn't let it fall. Right. So any Ukrainian president, one of the things I said to people in Kyiv is you survived Yanukovych. You can survive Zelensky, right? That's where, and we don't even know what Zelensky's orientation is. He's sent out some very mixed signals. This business about the referendum on NATO, I find disturbing because I consider that a settled issue in Ukraine. So why relitigate it? And it's obvious, it's politics. A lot of his support comes from the portion of Ukrainian society that doesn't support NATO integration, so he has to throw them something. But the way he's framed it is actually pretty acceptable to me. If and when Ukraine gets to the point where it gets an invitation to join NATO, then you put that to a referendum. I mean, that's what all of the new member states did, right? So there's nothing wrong there. Something when you watch his program, The Servant of the People, one thing that bothers me when I watch that program, and I wonder the extent to which this speaks to what Zelensky's all about, is the word that's missing from that entire show is the word Russia. You would, if you watch this show, you get the impression that Ukraine is some island in the Pacific that is fighting with itself over something. There is no outside power agitating this or causing it, and that bothers me a little bit. Another thing that bothers me is his comedy often pokes fun at Ukrainians. Mm-hmm. And a Ukrainian, you know, national stereotypes. And I think that is a little bit disturbing. Is that going to translate into something as president? I mean, I've been watching how the Russians are handled, are kind of portraying this, and I don't think they know what to make.
That was going to be my next question for both of you, is what is Russia saying about all of this?
Russia is, I mean, I decided to put myself through the torture of watching Russian television cover the Ukrainian elections because I just wanted to see it. And what they're doing is just making fun of the Ukrainian election. First of all, they're cherry picking everything that could possibly be construed as as some kind of an electoral violation, which is funny because these elections were like most, like almost all Ukrainian elections were deemed free and fair by all international observers. But they're picking at any little thing to show that, oh, the Ukrainian election is so corrupt. And I came to the conclusion that if the Russian authorities were half as concerned about democracy in Russia as they are about the democracy in Ukraine, then the Russians would be living in a democratic nirvana, right? But the whole vibe has been, oh, it's just these silly, unsophisticated Ukrainians can't even have an election, and look how chaotic it is. This clown is leading, and you know what a bardak, right? That's the vibe. In terms of Zelensky himself, I haven't really seen any kind of signs that they see him as their man. Now, there have been rumors out there and allegations that he's getting finance from Russia, but that hasn't been proven yet. So I don't know, Volodya, what are you seeing?
All right, let me say a few things on the previous Martha's question because I didn't get a chance to react
sorry
to
about that.
Yes, I would like to say that I think that there is a high chance of Poroshenko's continuation of a foreign policy in the second term if he gets to there. In terms of Zelensky, indeed, we can't say for sure. But I tend to agree with Brian when you say, Brian, that there is a certain positioning of Ukraine in terms of domestic sentiments and in terms of international connections that wouldn't allow big dramatic shifts in this positioning if Zelensky becomes a president. We're going to still need Western support. We're going to still have war on our hands with Russia. I don't think that Russia is willing or ready to deliver any big concessions or big reward to Zelensky if he becomes president. In fact, they might even want more, and they want to try if they can get more from new president, who is often perceived for right or wrong reasons as a pro-Russian president, politician.
So, what more would they want? You mean military incursion, or what is it that you think they would be pushing for?
They would like to see bigger economic presence. They would like Ukraine to agree to the fact that Crimea is part of Russia. They would like for Ukraine to definitely give some broader autonomy to Donbas without really reintegrating Donbas. So there are many things, and of course they would like Ukraine to publicly announce that we're not going to become members of EU or NATO anytime in the future, just to give up on this European and Euro-Atlantic integration.
Yeah, no, I would concur. Russia wants a bunch of things that Ukraine cannot give Russia.
Right, exactly. So we're in agreement. Yeah, we're in agreement here. Yeah.
It wants that Ukraine's sovereignty be limited. And no Ukrainian president, I mean, even Yanukovych had a problem with that. You know, what does that tell you, right? So, I mean, it's something that Ukraine cannot give Russia. Marta, you said at the outset, Ukrainians want peace. Well, I don't think they want peace at any cost. I don't think they want peace at the expense of their sovereignty.
Well, this is my question. This is my question.
I don't think, and they don't want peace at the expense of their sovereignty. Well, and it's become abundantly clear to everybody that what Russia wants at the end of the day is an end to Ukraine's sovereignty de facto. And nobody's prepared to give that up. And any president that tries to give that up, I think we got a clear indication of what's going to happen in the end of 2013 and the beginning of 2014.
Right. There's absolutely an urge for peace in Ukraine. And no one here is saying that we don't want peace. But like you said, Brian, it's all a matter of when, how, and why we're going to get peace. And if there are any conditions attached that are unacceptable to Ukraine, then Ukrainians don't want to have peace. And Ukraine is going to have this problem and the conflict with Russia on their hands, whatever happens. But who is more qualified to deal with it? I think the answer is more or less obvious. But yet, millions of Ukrainians seemingly prefer to make their choice based on other priorities on how they see the situation, going back to where I started. To a lot of people, they know what they pay for their utilities, what kind of prices they have in shops, the rampant corruption and everything like that is more important, apparently, than the issue of the war. Even though, you're right, Martha, as you said previously, the war is not a foreign issue or external issue, really, or it is actually also a domestic issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ukrainians want two things. I think they want somebody who's going to be a war leader, because Ukraine is at war. And Poroshenko has certainly distinguished himself on that front. But they also want somebody that's going to do something about corruption and about the standard of living. And he's not distinguished himself on that front. So we know he got one out of two on those things. We don't know if Zelensky's going to get zero out of two of those, or two out of two. We just don't know, because he's not debated. He's not held any campaign rallies. He's conducted the way I described it, I gave an interview to Channel 5, and I said, he's basically selling unicorns and rainbows and puppies here. And that's really, and we really, truly don't know. So for the average Ukrainian voter, this is a choice between the devil you know and the guy that's going to break all the dishes.
Right. Two things I would like to say. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so one thing is that we cannot say that Poroshenko hasn't done anything domestically as well. There have been reforms. They've been spotty. They haven't been systemic enough. And, of course, it was naive for any one of us who expected for the reforms and changes to happen overnight. So they take time, and it's a massive system here in Ukraine as well that needs time to break it. Second of all, we don't know what Zelensky will do domestically or internationally, because we don't know even how autonomous, independent actor he is. We know he's an actor, but in terms of a political actor, he's going to be controlled by someone. Who that someone will be? To me, he's just a mold, a plastiline, really. And what matters is who would give shape to him when he becomes a president, if he becomes a president.
You were both at a security forum in Kyiv recently. What interesting insight did you gain on Ukraine in the international context, the security issues, and how they're related to this presidential election campaign?
Hello, do you want to go first?
Right. Well, there have been a lot of talks. Basically, the almost entire first day of the forum was talks by politicians, including Poroshenko. Apparently, Zelensky was invited, but he didn't come. That doesn't come as a surprise to us, because Zelensky is avoiding any public forums. And that's beginning to have an impact, actually. If you look at the recent Kyiv International Institute of Sociology polling results, Zelensky is losing a little bit every day in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's true.
And Poroshenko is gaining. The problem for Poroshenko is that it's not enough time. It's only 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. If we imagine, for instance, there would be like 2 months between the two rounds of elections, that would be 50-50, tough, even elections, really, for Zelensky. Right now, he seems to be destined to win. But this policy of avoiding public debates, of not showing up, of not talking to the electorate, not talking to the journalists, is beginning to actually deteriorate.
To work against him.
In the polls. Yeah.
I'm actually curious about one thing, and may either of you, because I just saw how the SBU is now going to be investigating Zelensky for possible financing coming from Russia.
Is that
just some utka, or is that serious?
I don't know. It might be serious, but it's not going to unravel his chances to become president. It's too late for that. On the other hand, the Poroshenko is doing a pretty good job now in terms of actually going to the people and talking to the people and trying different formats. But the question is where he was before. I mean, why wasn't he doing this before?
Yeah, I know.
At least for several months, maybe the last year, preparing for elections, he saw the sociological pulse of how huge his anti-rating is. For a while now, why wasn't he doing that? Crashing the TV channel, talk shows, doing these massive events with people. People are actually responding to that. I'm hearing this on social media and everywhere. Yeah. People are saying, "Oh, look, our president actually has things to say and he has a vision." But why wasn't he doing that for enough time before?
That's a good damn question. And Valeria, I don't know about, I mean, at the forum, I don't know if you walked away from Poroshenko's speech with the same impression I did, but I saw somebody who was very bitter, very defensive, very angry, and who basically knew he was going to lose. Did you? That was my sense from watching that speech.
I did have the same impression. I don't think he struck it out right court there. He doubled down on him being a tough commander-in-chief, and that kind of electorate he already got. These people were voting for him anyway.
Yeah.
But that's not enough. He needed to expand. He needed to go out and say what he is actually saying in some radio messages, like, "I made mistakes. I'm sorry. I'll do better in a second term." And to talk more about domestic issues as well, not just about the war, not just about his opponent being a virtual candidate and Russia playing the whole situation to its advantage, but how he can do better in terms of domestic performance. And he tried to do that in the recent couple of weeks, but that's not enough. That's not enough time for him.
Now, one of the other things I noticed in Kyiv, and Volodya, this probably isn't a big news to you because you're in Ukraine all the time, but for me, I never saw Ukrainians so angry with each other over something. I mean, every discussion about the election turned into a shouting match.
Absolutely.
Among Ukrainians. and I was standing there watching this, very, very surprised. People that are for Poroshenko are passionate about it, even though they don't really like him. And people that are for Zelensky are passionate about it, even though they don't really know him. And I found that I just never saw Kyiv so stressed out and
Absolutely.
So passionate and polarized about something that it's kind of weird being polarized about something where one of the candidates you don't even really like that much,
well, but
and the other you don't even know at all.
That's because it's all about Poroshenko, really. For staunch supporters of Poroshenko, it's all about him, and for staunch opponents of Poroshenko, it's all about him. Zelensky is really a chance to deliver a blow to Poroshenko if you hate him.
This is a referendum about Poroshenko in a lot of ways.
And you're quite right. I don't recall this election cycle like this before.
No, I don't. I never saw anything like this.
The bitterness, the recrimination, the quarrels, and basically in the same. A segment, of people, really, people who want reforms, people who are very pro-Ukrainian, many people who are very anti-Russian, and even among those people in that crowd, there is a lot of animosity there.
No, and I've even seen situations where, like, and I'm not going to mention names because we all know these people, but, like, Ukrainians who I know to be, like, you know, deeply patriotic Ukrainians, and somebody's like, look out for him. He's, like, you know, with Zelensky, and he's, like, going to sell us out to the Russians, or don't talk to him. He's like, just a shill for Poroshenko. I mean, you're kind of seeing this kind of recrimination that I'm kind of accustomed to here in the U.S., but I had not really experienced before in Ukraine. I mean, maybe in this sense, if I want to look at this positively, it's like, okay, Ukraine's joining the West. It's becoming just as polarized as the rest of us. But it's who knows? But it was something that really it was impossible not to notice this when
I
was there.
I would like to stress out again is that a lot of people who are going to vote for Zelensky, they're not pro-Russian. They're very much
pro-Russian. No, they're not.
They're pro-reform. They are fed up with Poroshenko. They don't think he can deliver more than what he did in the first 5 years. So they want to give a chance to someone else, even at the expense of voting for someone who is a blank sheet of paper, really.
Yeah, no, and this the funny thing. I mean, we always got to remember, Ukraine is not kind to its incumbents. Only one incumbent president in Ukraine's post-independence history has ever won re-election, and that's Kuchma. Right. And that didn't go so well in the second term. Right. So I think Ukrainians are very, very cautious about giving somebody a second term. And Poroshenko, regardless of what he did, may have fallen victim to this. Right.
Can I just ask about Macron again? Because we didn't really talk about that. What I found very interesting was that both candidates decided to go on a little trip to Paris and have photo ops with the French president. We didn't actually hear Zelensky speaking. It was just images. But what do you make of this? I mean, why were they both going to Paris? How important is this? Is it perhaps not significant?
Well, that was interesting, of course. We might still not know enough details on those trips, but it seems clear what Poroshenko was trying to do. He wanted to go to the major Western capitals and boast up his image of an international player who is respected, who is welcome to talk to the world leaders and stuff like that. When Zelensky tried to crush that and undermine this whole trip for Poroshenko by showing up there as well, what actually matters is what is interesting, why Macron decided to meet with Zelensky.
Exactly.
I'm still a little puzzled.
I'm not, because it's obvious he's going to win.
Yeah, maybe, but let him win, and then,
Look, I mean, I remember back in the 2008 election, Barack Obama made a big European trip. To meet with European leaders, and that it's kind of a normal thing to do for it's a normal thing for the sitting president to do because he wants to again burnish his image as the commander in chief. Right. And I have all these great. And for Zelensky, I can do this too. You know, he has to show that he can, that Ukrainian voters have to look at him and imagine him going to Paris or going to Berlin. And they're okay, so I'm going to go to Paris so they can see it. So it's something they can imagine. So it's not surprising and it's nothing unique to Ukraine.
I think the Macron has his own intentions here and interests. He wants to show that he's on top of things, that France is a big player, that France wants to meet with major contenders here in Ukraine. With his recent announcements about the new independent, autonomous European defense and security policy or something like that, he's trying to position himself, and with domestic troubles that he has as well, he wants to, you know, resolve this whole situation and improve his rating and the whole idea of greatness of France with inviting, Ukrainian contenders to
play. I mean, another thing I noticed along these lines while I was in Kyiv is that, like, Western diplomats, whether they're European or North Americans, don't seem that worried about Zelensky. And I think, and that to me was actually very telling.
Right.
I didn't see a lot of panic among the Western diplomatic corps, whether it was, again, North American or Western European. I found kind of that, and I think this is because Ukraine's direction is fixed, right? It's fixed, and any president has to deal with it. The room for maneuver is not very high.
That's one reason. Another reason is that a lot of people are not happy about Poroshenko's performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's not just from a forum, but also from talking to people for the last several years. There is appreciation of certain things Poroshenko has done, but then there is always a puzzlement about how he didn't deliver more,
mm-hmm.
And unhappiness, and willingness to take risks as well with the Ukrainians voting for Zelensky and see if there is a new blood, if there is rotation in power, if there is new people coming, and what might come out of it.
Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens on Sunday on the second round of the election and what the response of the international community will be and if, in fact, there will be any changes. I don't know if you'd like to add anything quickly because we've just about run out of time.
Yes, two quick things.
Mm-hmm.
At the forum, I had a chance to talk to two ambassadors, among the others, Marie Ivanovich, one from United States, and Roman Vashuk, ambassador from Canada, and both have done a lot of good things to help Ukraine in this time of need. Mary Ivanovich found herself under a lot of fire recently, completely undeserved. There was a lot of completely made-up criticism of her work and even some insinuations and conspiracy theories behind it. And unfortunately, some on Ukrainian side, including Prosecutor General Lutsenko, contributed to that. For Ambassador Vashuk, he's been there for almost 5 years now, I think, and he's done a lot of good things. And actually, Canada came out very strongly as a big friend and a major friend of Ukraine. And we've got to appreciate the support that came from both of these countries.
Well, I saw a piece by the Canadian ambassador yesterday or today saying there's no need to panic about the election in Ukraine. So that echoes what both of you have already said. Brian, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. I mean, I would just, again, like I said, I've always been a glass half full guy on Ukraine. I think the glass is more than half full. I think the glass is like 2/3 or 3/4 full right now. I mean, it's just this last bit, this last hump that Ukraine has to get over is the most difficult one. This transition from oligarchic pluralism to real pluralism, and that is a security issue. It's inseparable from the security issue. It is the hardest jump to make. And what we're witnessing like up close right now is the turbulence of that. It's just going to be very turbulent. But if you look at the big picture, if you can look at Ukraine's history from the moment of independence to now, the direction has been, it's been one direction toward the West. Sure, it's been two steps forward, a step and a half back. but the direction is it's unsteady and it's messy and sometimes it ain't pretty, but it's going in one direction and I expect it to continue to go in that direction. So I'm a little bit worried. But ultimately, I'm optimistic about this. I can easily see how a Zelensky presidency could be good for Ukraine, and I can easily see how a second term for Poroshenko could be good for Ukraine. So I'm optimistic. I'm not going to be Pollyannish about it and say there's nothing to worry about because there's a lot to worry about. There's a war going on. Mm-hmm. But I am optimistic. This country has made its choice, and when a country makes that kind of a choice, there's no turning back.
Well, that's perhaps a note to end on. Thank you both for your insight. We've been speaking to two of Ukraine policy experts, foreign policy experts on Ukraine, Brian Whitmore, senior fellow and the director of the Russia program at SIPA, which is the Center of European Policy Analysis in Washington, and Volodymyr Dubovik, associate professor of international relations at Odessa Mechnikov National University. Thank you very much for your insights, and we'll have to have you on the show again.
Thanks
for having us.
It's worth taking chances in life. There's no point in waiting. These are lyrics from the song Sister by the Velvet Sun, a band from Kiev. Enjoy.
Тече поміж нами та кров. любов достеменно. Тому моя сестра сідає біля мене. Кого, як не тебе, я люблю, як друга. Кому, як не мені, розкажеш цю тугу. Чи ти пам'ятаєш, як ми печалі, гріхи і хвороби. Життя варте спроби, життя варте спроби. Попри всі печалі, гріхи і хвороби. Життя варте спроби, життя варте спроби. За давніх давен, як ліси були ближче, сиділа самотня ти біля вогнища, і відчаю повна вогнище питала, чому все так гірко, чом правди так мало. Що не варто чекати, тож серце холодне замкнувши заграти, подумала ти, що не варто чекати. Дванадцятий день загасила багаття і в тіло своє оксамитове плаття. В дванадцятий день загасила багаття і в тіло своє оксамитове плаття. Зелене було воно, ліс бо зелений, шумів, вирував на схід сонця шалено. Зелене було воно, ліс бо зелений, шумів, вирував на схід сонця шалено. Ти бігла, ти бігла, ти бігла.
дивитися, як впаде насіння, має сенс дивитися, як росте коріння, має сенс дивитися, як в торішнім листі паростки шепочуться всі нові та чисті, має сенс дивитися тихо під корою, сік древесний молиться, щоб текти весною, має сенс дивитися.
Next week, I will be interviewing Professor Mikhailo Vinitsky about the results of the presidential election. And we have a roundup of the top news stories and some new music. So be sure to tune in for a new episode. And we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@romatskoradio.org. I'm Alexandra Wishart for Romatsko Radio in Kyiv. Thank you so much for listening.